Well, then, how do we attack so we won't be picked off first thing? What kind of weapons?
Silver bullets, cried Will suddenly.
Heck no, snorted Jim. They're not vampires.
If we were Catholic, we could borrow church holy water and...
Nuts, said Jim. Movie stuff. It don't happen that way in real life. Am I wrong, Mr. Holloway?
I wish you were, boy.
Will's eyes glowed fiercely.
Okay. Only one thing to do. Trot down to the meadow with a couple of gallons of kerosene and some matches.
That's against the law, Jim exclaimed.
Look who's talking.
Hold on.
But everyone stopped right then.
Whisper.
A faint tide of wind flowed up along through the library corridors and into this room.
The front door,
Jim whispered.
Someone just opened it.
Far away, a gentle click. The draft that had for a moment stirred the boy's trouser cuffs and blown the man's hair ceased.
Someone just closed it.
Silence. Just the great dark library with its labyrinths and hedgerow mazes of sleeping books.
Someone's inside.
The boys half rose, bleating in the backs of their mouths. Charles Holloway waited, then said one word softly.
Hide.
We can't leave you.
Hide.
The boys ran and vanished in the dark maze. Charles Holloway then rigidly, slowly, breathing in, breathing out, forced himself to sit back down, his eyes on the yellowed newspapers, to wait. To wait. Then again, to wait some more. Chapter 41. A shadow moved among shadows. Charles Holloway felt his soul submerge. It took a long time for the shadow and the man it escorted to come stand in the doorway of the room. The shadow seemed deliberate in its slowness, so as to shingle his flesh and cheese grate his steadily willed calm. And when at last the shadow reached the door, it brought not one, not 100, but 1,000 people with it to look in.
My name is Dark, said the voice.
Charles Holloway let out 2 fistfuls of air.
Better known as the Illustrated Man, said the voice. Where are the boys?
Boys? Will's father turned at last to appraise the tall man who stood in the door. The Illustrated Man sniffed the yellow pollen that whiffed up from the ancient books, as quite suddenly Will's father saw them laid out in full sight, leaped up, stopped, then began to close them, one by one, as casually as possible. The Illustrated Man pretended not to notice.
The boys are not home. The 2 houses are empty. What a shame. They'll miss those free rides.
I wish I knew where they were.
Charles Holloway started carrying the books to the shelves.
Hell, if they knew you were here with free tickets, they'd shout for joy.
Would they?
Mr. Dark let his smile melt like a white and pink paraffin candy toy he no longer had appetite for. Softly, he said,
I could kill you.
Charles Holloway nodded, walking slowly.
Did you hear what I said? Barked the Illustrated Man.
Yes. Charles Holloway weighed the books as if they were his judgment.
But you won't kill now. You're too smart. You've kept the show on the road a long time, being smart.
So you've read a few papers and think you know all about us?
No, not all. Just enough to scare me.
Be more scared, then, said the crowd of night-crawling illustrations, locked under black suiting, speaking through the thin lips. One of my friends outside can fix it so it seems you died of most natural heart failure.
The blood banged at Charles Holloway's heart, knocked at his temples,
tapped twice at his wrists. The witch, he thought. His lips must have formed the words.
The witch, Mr. Dark nodded.
The other shelved the books, withholding one.
Well, what have you there?
Mr. Dark squinted.
A Bible? How very charming. How childish and refreshingly old-fashioned. Have you ever read it, Mr. Dark?
Read it? I've had every page, paragraph, and word read at me, sir.
Mr. Dark took time to light a cigarette and blow smoke toward the no-smoking sign, then at Will's father.
Do you really imagine that books can harm me? Is naivete really your armor? Here.
And before Charles Holloway could move, Mr. Dark ran lightly forward and took the Bible. He held it in his two hands.
Aren't you surprised? See, I touch, hold, even read from it.
Mr. Dark blew smoke on the pages as he riffled them.
Do you expect me to fall away into so many Dead Sea scrolls of flesh before you? Myths, unfortunately, are just that. Life, and by life I could mean so many fascinating things, goes on, makes shift for itself, survives wildly, and I not the least wild among many.
Your King James and his literary version of some rather stuffy poetic materials is worth just about this much of my time and sweat.
Mr. Dark hurled the Bible into a waste paper basket and did not look at it again.
I hear your heart beating rapidly, said Mr. Dark. My ears are not so finely tuned as the gypsies, but they hear. Your eyes jump beyond my shoulder. The boys hide out there in the warrens.
Good. I would not wish for their escape. Not that anyone will believe their gibberings. In fact, it's good advertisement for our shows. People titillate, night sweat, then come prowling down to look us over, lick their lips, and wonder about investing in our special securities. You came. You prowled. And it wasn't just for curiosity. How old are you?
Charles Holloway pressed his lips shut.
50, purred Mr. Dark. 51, he murmured. 52. Like to be younger?
No!
No need to yell. Politely, please.
Mr. Dark hummed, strolling the room, running his hand over the books as if they were years to be counted.
Oh, it's nice to be young, really. Wouldn't 40 be nice again? 40's 10 years nicer than 50. And 30's 20 years nicer by an incredible long shot.
I won't listen.
Charles Holloway shut his eyes. Mr. Dark tilted his head, sucked on his cigarette, and observed,
strange. You shut your eyes not to listen. Clapping your hands over your ears would be better.
Will's father clapped his hands to his ears, but the voice came through.
Tell you what, said Mr. Dark casually, waving his cigarette. If you help me within 15 seconds, I'll give you your 40th birthday. 10 seconds and you can celebrate 35. A rare young age, a stripling almost by comparison. I'll start counting by my watch, and by God, if you should jump to it, lend a hand, I might just cut 30 years off your life. Bargains galore, as the posters say. Think of it, starting all over again. Everything fine and new and glorious, all the things to be done and thought and savored again. The last chance to be done and thought and savored again. The last chance. Here goes. 1, 2, 3, 4. Charles Holloway hunched away, half crouched,
propped hard against the shelves, grinding his teeth to drown the sound of counting.
"You're losing out, old man, my dear old fellow," said Mr. Dark. "Five. Losing. Six. Losing very much. Seven. Really losing. Eight. Frittering away. Nine. 10. My God, you fool! 11. Halloway. 12. Almost gone. 13. Gone. 14. Lost. 15. Lost forever.
Mr. Dark put down his arm with the watch on it. Charles Halloway, gasping, had turned away to bury his face in the smell of ancient books, the feel of old and comfortable leather, the taste of funeral dust and pressed flowers. Mr. Dark stood in the door now, on his way out. "Stay there," he directed. "Listen to your heart. I'll send someone to fix it. But first, the boys." The crowd of unsleeping creatures, saddled upon tall flesh, strode quietly forth into darkness, borne with and all over upon Mr. Dark. Their cries and whines and utterances of vague but excruciating excitements sounded in his husky summoning.
"Boys, are you there? Wherever you are, answer."
Charles Halloway sprang forward, then felt the room spin and whirl him as that soft, that easy, that most pleasant voice of Mr. Dark went calling through the dark. Charles Halloway fell against a chair, thought, "Listen, my heart," sank down to his knees. He said, "Listen to my heart. It explodes. Oh, God, it's tearing free." And could not follow. The illustrated man trod cat soft in the labyrinths of shelved and darkly waiting books.
"Boys, hear me?"
Silence.
"Boys."
Chapter 42. Somewhere in the recumbent solitudes, the motionless but teeming millions of books, lost in 24 turns right, 36 turns left, down aisles, through corridors, toward dead ends, locked doors, half-empty shelves, somewhere in the literary soot of Dickens's London, or Dostoevsky's Moscow, or the steppes beyond, somewhere in the vellumed dust of Atlas, or Geographic, sneezes pent but set like traps, the boys crouched, stood, lay sweating a cool and constant brine. Somewhere hidden, Jim thought, he's coming. Somewhere hidden, Will thought, he's near.
"Boys!"
Mr. Dark came carrying his panoply of friends, his jewel case assortment of calligraphical reptiles, which lay sunning themselves at midnight on his flesh. With him strode the stitch-inked Tyrannosaurus Rex, which lent to his haunches a machined and ancient wellspring mineral oil glide. As the thunder lizard strode, all glass bead pomp, so strode Mr. Dark, armored with vile lightning scribbles of carnivores and sheep, blasted by that thunder and a run before storms of juggernaut flesh. It was the pterodactyl kite and scythe which raised his arms almost to fly the marbled vaults. And with the inked and stenciled flash-burnt shapes of pistoned or bladed doom came his usual crowd of hangers-on, spectators gripped to each limb, seated on shoulder blades, peering from his jungled chest, hung upside down in microscopic millions in his armpit vaults, screaming bat screams for encounters, ready for the hunt, and if need be, the kill. Like a black tidal wave upon a bleak shore,
a dark tumult infilled with phosphorescent beauties and badly spoiled dreams. Mr. Dark sounded and hissed his feet, his legs, his body, his sharp face forward.
Boys.
Immensely patient, that soft voice, ever the warmest friend to chilly creatures burrowed away, nested amongst dry books. So he scuttered, crept, scurried, stalked, tiptoed, wafted, stood immensely still among the primates, the Egyptian monuments to bestial gods, brushed black histories of dead Africa, stayed a while in Asia, then sauntered on to newer lands.
Boys, I know you hear me. The sign reads silence, so I'll whisper. One of you still wants what we offer, eh? Eh?
Jim, thought Will. Me, thought Jim. No, oh no, not still, not me.
Come out.
Mr. Dark purred the air through his teeth. I guarantee rewards. Whoever turns himself in wins it all.
Bangity bang. My heart, thought Jim. Is that me, thought Will, or Jim?
I hear you. Mr. Dark's lips quivered. Closer now.
Will?
Jim? Isn't it Jim who's the smart one? Come along, boy.
No, thought Will. I don't know anything, thought Jim wildly.
Jim, yes. Mr. Dark wheeled in a new direction. Jim, show me where your friend is.
Softly.
We'll shut him up. Give you the ride that would have been his if he'd used his head. Right, Jim? A dove voice cooing.
Closer. I hear your heart jump.
Stop, thought Will to his chest. Stop!
Jim clenched his breath.
Stop!
I wonder, are you in this alcove?
Mr. Dark let the peculiar gravity of a certain group of stacks tug him forward.
You here, Jim? Or over behind?
He shoved a trolley of books mindlessly off on rubber rollers to bump through the night. A long way off it crashed, and spilled its contents to the floor like so many dead black ravens.
Smart hide-and-seekers, both, said Mr. Dark. But someone's smarter. Did you hear the carousel calliope tonight? Did you know someone dear to you was down to the carousel? Will? Willie. William. William Halloway. Where's your mother tonight?
Silence.
She was out riding the night wind, Willie William. Around. We put her on. Around. We left her on. Around. You hear, Willie? Around. A year. Another year. Another. Around. Around.
Dad, thought Will, where are you?
In the far room, Charles Halloway, seated, his heart pounding, heard and thought, he won't find them. I won't move unless he does. He can't find them. They won't listen. They won't believe. He'll go away.
Your mother will, called Mr. Dark softly. Around and around. Can you guess which direction, Willie?
Mr. Dark circled his thin ghost hand in the dark air between the stacks.
Around and around. And when we let your mother off, boy, and showed her herself in the mirror maze, you should have heard the one single sound she made. She was like a cat with a hairball in her so big and sticky there was no way to gag it out. No way to scream around the hair coming out her nostrils and ears and eyes, boy. And her old, old, old.
The last we saw of her, boy Willie, she was running off away from what she saw in the mirrors. She'll bang Jim's house door, but when his ma sees a thing 200 years old slobbering at the keyhole, begging the mercy of gunshot death, boy, Jim's ma will gag the same way, like a hairballed cat sick but can't be sick, and beat her away, send her beggaring the streets where no one'll believe, will, such a kettle of bones and spit, no one'll believe this was a rose beauty, your kind relation. So, Will, it's up to us to run find, run save her, for we know who she is. Right, Will, right, Will, right, right, right.
The dark man's voice hissed away to silence. Very faintly now, somewhere in the library, someone was sobbing.
Ah. The illustrated man gasped the air pleasantly from his dark lungs.
Yes. Here, he murmured. What? Filed under B for boys, A for adventure, H for hidden, S for secret, T for terrified, or filed under J for Jim, or N for nightshade, W for William, H for Holloway. Where are my two precious human books, so I may turn their pages, eh?
He kicked the place for his right foot on the first shelf of a towering stack. He shoved his right foot in, put his weight there, and swung his left foot free. There. His left foot hit the second shelf, knocked space. He climbed. His right foot kicked the hole on the third shelf, plunged books back, and so up and up he climbed, to fourth shelf, to fifth, to sixth, groping dark library heavens, hands clutching shelf boards, then scrabbling higher to leaf night to find boys, if boys there were, like bookmarks among books. His right hand, a princely tarantula, garlanded with roses, cracked a book of Bayeux tapestries a spin down the sightless abyss below. It seemed an age before the tapestries struck all askew, a ruin of beauty, an avalanche of gold, silver, and sky-blue thread on the floor. His left hand, reaching the ninth shelf, as he panted, grunted, encountered empty space. No books. Boys, are you here on Everest? Silence. Except for the faint sobbing, nearer now. Is it cold here? Colder? Coldest?
The eyes of the illustrated man came abreast of the 11th shelf. Like a corpse laid rigid out, face down just 3 inches away, was Jim Nightshade.
One shelf further up in the catacomb, eyes trembling with tears, lay William Holloway.
Well, said Mr. Dark. He reached a hand to pat Will's head.
Hello, he said.
Chapter 43. To Will, the palm of the hand that drifted up was like a moon rising. Upon it was the fiery blue-inked portrait of himself. Jim, too, saw a hand before his face. His own picture looked back at him from the palm. The hand with Will's picture grabbed Will. The hand with Jim's picture grabbed Jim. Shrieks and yells. The illustrated man heaved. Twisting, he fell-jumped to the floor. The boys, kicking, yelling, fell with him. They landed on their feet, toppled, collapsed, to be held, reared, set right, fistfuls of their shirts in Mr. Dark's fists.
Jim, he said. Will.
What were you doing up there, boys? Surely not reading.
Dad! Mr. Holloway!
Will's father stepped from the dark.
The illustrated man rearranged the boys tenderly under one arm like kindling, then gazed with genteel curiosity at Charles Holloway and reached for him.
Will's father struck one blow before his left hand was seized, held, squeezed. As the boys watched, shouting, they saw Charles Holloway gasp and fall to one knee.
Mr. Dark squeezed that left hand harder, and doing this, slowly, certainly, pressured the boys with his other arm, crushing their ribs so air gushed from their mouths. Night spiraled in fiery whorls like great thumbprints inside Will's eyes. Will's father, groaning, sank to both knees, flailing his right arm. Damn you! But, said the carnival owner quietly, I am already. Damn you! Damn you!
Not words, old man, said Mr. Dark. Not words in books or words you say, but real thoughts, real actions. Quick thought, quick action, win the day. So.
He gave one last mighty clench of his fist. The boys heard Charles Holloway's finger bones crack. He gave a last cry and fell senseless. In one motion, like a solemn pavan, the illustrated man rounded the stacks, the boys kicking books from shelves under his arms. Will, feeling walls, books, floors fly by, foolishly thought, pressed close, why, Mr. Dark smells like calliope steam. Both boys were dropped suddenly. Before they could move or regain their breath, each was gripped by the hair on their head and roused marionettes-wise to face a window, a street.
Boys, you read Dickens? Mr. Dark whispered. Critics hate his coincidences, but we know, don't we? Life's all coincidence. Turn death, and happenstance flakes off him like fleas from a killed ox. Look.
Both boys writhed in the Iron Maiden clutch of hungry saurians and bristly apes. Will did not know whether to weep with joy or new despair. Below, across the avenue, passing from church going home, was his mother and Jim's mother. Not on the carousel, not old, crazy, dead in jail, but freshly out in the good October air. She had been not 100 yards away in church during all the last 5 minutes. Mom! Screamed Will against the hand which, anticipating his cry, clamped tight to his mouth.
Mom! Crooned Mr. Dark mockingly. Come save me.
No, thought Will. Save yourself! Run! But his mother and Jim's mother simply strolled content from the warm church through town. Mom! Screamed Will again, and some small muffled bleat of it escaped the sweaty paw. Will's mother, 1,000 miles away over on that sidewalk, paused. She couldn't have heard, thought Will, yet she looked over at the library.
Good, sighed Mr. Dark. Excellent. Fine.
Here, thought Will. See us, Mom. Run, call the police.
Why doesn't she look at this window, asked Mr. Dark quietly, and see us three standing as for a portrait? Look over, then come running. We'll let her in.
Will strangled a sob. No, no. His mother's gaze trailed from the front entrance to the first floor windows.
Here, said Mr. Dark. Second floor. A proper coincidence. Let's make it proper.
Now Jim's mother was talking. Both women stood together at the curb. No, thought Will, oh no.
And the women turned and went away into the Sunday night town.
Will felt the illustrated man slump the tiniest bit.
Not much of a coincidence,
No crisis, no one lost or saved. Pity. Well, dragging the boy's feet, he glided down to open the front door. Someone waited in the shadows. A lizard hand scurried cold on Will's chin.
Halloway, husked the witch's voice.
A chameleon perched on Jim's nose.
Nightshade, whisked the dry broom voice.
Behind her stood the dwarf and the skeleton, silent, shifting, apprehensive. Obedient to the occasion, the boys would have given their best stored yells air, but again, on the instant recognizing their need, the illustrated man trapped the sound before it could issue forth, then nodded curtly to the old dust woman. The witch toppled forward with her seamed black wax sewn shut iguana eyelids and her great proboscis with the nostrils caked like tobacco-blackened pipe bowls, her fingers tracing, weaving a silent plinth of symbols on the mind. The boys stared. Her fingernails fluttered, darted, feathered cold winter water air. Her pickled green frog's breath crawled their flesh in pimples as she sang softly, mewing, humming, glistering her babes, her boys, her friends of the slick, snail-tracked roof, the straight-flung arrow, the stricken and sky-drowned balloon.
Darning needle dragonfly, sew up these mouths so they not speak.
Touch, sew, her thumbnail stabbed, punched, drew, stabbed, punched, drew along their lower upper lips until they were thread pouch shut with invisible thread.
Darning needle dragonfly, sew up these ears so they not hear. Cold sand funneled Will's ears, burying her voice.
Muffled, far away, fading, she chanted on with a rustle, tick, tickle, tap, flourish of caliper hands. Moss grew in Jim's ears, swiftly sealing him deep.
Darning needle dragonfly, sew up these eyes so they not see.
Her white-hot fingerprints rolled back their stricken eyeballs to throw the lids down with bangs like great tin doors slammed shut. Will saw a billion flashbulbs explode, then suck to darkness while the unseen darning needle insect out beyond somewhere pranced and fizzed like insect drawn to sun-warmed honey pot as closeted voice stitched off their senses forever and a day beyond.
Darning needle dragonfly, have done with eye, ear, lip, and tooth. Finish hem, so dark, mound dust, heap with slumber sleep. Now tie all knots ever so neat. Pump silence in blood like sand in river deep. So, so.
The witch, somewhere outside the boys, lowered her hands. The boys stood silent. The illustrated man took his embrace from them and stepped back. The woman from the dust sniffed at her twin triumphs, ran her hand a last loving time over her statues. The dwarf toddled madly about in the boys' shadows, nibbling daintily at their fingernails, softly calling their names. The illustrated man nodded toward the library. The janitor's clock. Stop it. The witch, mouth wide, savoring doom, wandered off into the marble quarry. Mr. Dark said, left, right, one, two. The boys walked down the steps. The dwarf at Jim's side, the skeleton at Will's. Serene as death, the illustrated man followed. Chapter 44. Somewhere near, Charles Halloway's hand lay in a white-hot furnace, melted to sheer nerve and pain. He opened his eyes,
At the same moment, he heard a great breath as the front door swung shut and a woman's voice came singing in the hall.
Old man, old man, old man, old man.
Where his left hand should be was this swelled blood pudding which pulsed with such ecstasies of pain. It fed forth his life, his will, his whole attention. He tried to sit up, but the pain hammer-blowed him down again.
Old man?
Not old. 54's not old, he thought wildly. And here she came on the worn stone floors, her moth fingers tapping, scanning braille book titles as her nostrils siphoned the shadows. Charles Holloway hunched and crawled toward the nearest stack, cramming pain back with his tongue. He must climb out of reach, climb where books might be weapons flung down upon any night-crawling pursuer.
Old man, hear your breathing.
She drifted on his tide, let her body be summoned by every sibilant hiss of his pain.
Old man, feel your hurt.
If he could fling the hand, the pain, out the window, where it might lie beating like a heart, summoning her away, tricked, to go seek this awful fire. Bent in the street, he imagined her brisking her palms at this throb, an abandoned chunk of delirium. But no, the hand stayed, glowed, poisoned the air, hurrying the strange nun-gypsy's tread as she gasped her avaricious mouth most ardently.
Damn you, he cried. Get it over with. I'm here.
So the witch wheeled, swift as a black clothes dummy on rubber rollers, and swayed over him. He did not even look at her. Such weights and pressures of despair and exertion fought for his attention, he could only free his eyes to watch the inside of his lids, upon which multiple and ever-changing looms of terror jigged and gambled.
Very simple,
the whisper bent low.
Stop the heart.
Why not, he thought, vaguely.
Slow,
she murmured. Yes, he thought.
Slow. Very slow.
His heart, once bolting, now fell away to a strange disease. Disquiet. Then quiet, then ease.
Much more slow, slow, she suggested.
Tired, yes. You hear that, heart? He wondered. His heart heard. Like a tight fist, it began to relax a finger at a time.
Stop all for good. Forget all for good. She whispered.
Well, why not?
Slower. Slowest.
His heart stumbled. And then, for no reason, save perhaps for a last look around, because he did want to get rid of the pain, and sleep was the way to do that, Charles Holloway opened his eyes. He saw the witch. He saw her fingers working at the air, his face, his body, the heart within his body, and the soul within the heart. Her swamp breath flooded him, while, with immense curiosity, he watched the poisonous drizzle from her lips, counted the folds in her stitch-wrinkled eyes, the Gila monster neck, the mummy linen ears, the dry rivulet river sand brow. Never in his life had he focused so nearly to a person as if she were a puzzle, which, once touched together, might show life's greatest secret. The solution was in her. It would all spring clear this moment. No, the next. No, the next. Watch her scorpion fingers. Hear her chant as she diddled the air. Yes, diddled was it. Tickling, tickling.
Slow, she whispered. Slow,
and his obedient heart pulled rein. Diddle tickle went her fingers. Charles Holloway snorted. Faintly, he giggled. He caught this.
Why,
Why am I giggling at such a time?
The witch pulled back the merest quarter inch as if some strange but hidden electric light socket touched with wet whorl gave shock.
Charles Holloway saw but did not see her flinch, sensed but seemed in no way to consider her withdrawal, for almost immediately, seizing the initiative, she flung herself forward, not touching, but mutely gesticulating at his chest as one might try to spell an antique clock pendulum.
"Slow!" she cried.
Senselessly, he permitted an idiot smile to balloon itself up from somewhere, to attach itself with careless ease under his nose.
"Slowest!"
Her new fever, her anxiety, which changed itself to anger, was even more of a toy to him. A part of his attention, secret until now, leaned forward to scan every pore of her Halloween face. Somehow, irresistibly, the prime thing was nothing mattered. Life, in the end, seemed a prank of such size you could only stand off at this end of the corridor to note its meaningless length and its quite unnecessary height. A mountain built to such ridiculous immensities you were dwarfed in its shadow and mocking of its pomp. So, with death this near, he thought numbly but purely upon a billion vanities, arrivals, departures, idiot excursions of boy, boy-man, man, and old-man-goat. He had gathered and stacked all manner of foibles, devices, playthings of his egotism, and now, between all the silly corridors of books, the toys of his life swayed, and none more grotesque than this thing named Witch Gypsy Reader of Dust, tickling, that's what, just tickling the air. Fool! Didn't she know what she was doing? He opened his mouth. Of itself, like a child born of an unsuspecting parent, one single raw laugh broke free. The witch swooned back. Charles Holloway did not see. He was far too busy letting the joke rush through his fingers, letting hilarity spring forth of its own volition along his throat, eyes squeezed shut. There it flew, whipping shrapnel in all directions. "You!" he cried, to no one, everyone, himself, her, them, it, all. "Funny! You!"
"No!" the witch protested.
"Stop tickling!" he gasped.
"Not!"
she lunged back frantically.
"Not! Sleep! Slow! Very slow!"
"No! Tickling is all it is, for sure!" he roared.
"Oh! Ah! Stop! Yes! Stop! Heart!"
she squealed.
"Stop! Blood!"
Her own heart must have shaken like a tambourine. Her hands shook. In mid-gesticulation, she froze and became aware of the silly fingers.
"Oh, my God!" he wept, beautiful, glad tears. "Get off my ribs! Oh, go on, my heart!"
"Your heart, yes!"
"God!"
he popped his eyes wide, gulped air,